Hey there, and welcome back to Take One, the podcast that brings you just one distinguished page of Talmud each day. And today's page, Bava Metzia 27, is, well, it's very particular, because today the rabbis continue their in-depth discussion of simanim, or distinguishing marks. Why are they so important? Because, say the rabbis, if you're trying to figure out whether or not you should return an object to its owner, your best bet are these marks that can easily prove ownership. Put simply, it's one thing for Joe, say, to walk up to Jim and say, "Hey man, this is my jacket, so give it back to me. And I know it's my jacket because this jacket is black and the jacket I just lost was also black." But it's another thing altogether for Joe to say to Jim, "Hey man, this is my jacket, and I could prove it to you because my jacket has a tiny red stain the shape of the state of Florida about half an inch below the right-hand side pocket." The more specific the siman or mark, the more clear the case for ownership, and therefore the more stringent the requirement to return the lost object to its rightful owner. So far, so good. But what, the rabbis ask on today's page, really constitutes a siman? To that end, they give us three categories. There are simanim muvhakim, or clear and obvious marks, like that oddly shaped stain on Joe's jacket. About these, there is no argument. And there are simanim emtzaim, or mid-level marks, like how much a certain object weighs, say, or how many inches it measures. This is less specific, but still, the rabbi's reason, requires a certain intimate level of familiarity with the object in question. And then there are simanim klalim, or general marks, which is like saying that your object was purple and this object is also purple, a bit too general and vague to truly constitute a distinguishing mark. Simanim muvhakim, the rabbis agree, are proof positive. And simanim klalim, they also agree, are more or less meaningless. On today's page, they explore this middle category, the simanim emtzaim, trying to figure out whether these not too vague but not too specific distinguishing marks are enough to make a case for ownership. What they're really talking about, of course, is reasoning. Very broadly speaking, and if you're a mathematician or a philosopher, don't come at me for this, there are two major ways of reasoning, or coming to conclusions about the world, ways that we could figure things out just by observing things around us. One is called inductive reasoning, which is moving from the very specific to the very general. I see this baby. She is a year old. She just started talking. Now, I'll go look at other one-year-olds, and if they too are babbling happily, I will conclude that all one-year-olds begin experimenting with speech around this age. The other type of reasoning is deductive reasoning, and it moves in precisely the opposite direction, beginning with general observations and then getting into the specifics. If I know, for example, that all insects have six legs and I want to learn something about a spider, I could begin by counting its legs and seeing that it has eight of them, and therefore I can know for certain that a spider isn't an insect. QED. That's the sort of logical reasoning the rabbis seem to be advocating on today's page of Talmud. Start from the general and move on to the specific, which means that one Sherlock Holmes would have been a great Talmudic rabbi. Want proof? Here goes, courtesy of one Dr. Watson, from the classic Arthur Conan Doyle story, A Study in Scarlet. Watson, that most diligent of sidekicks, catalogs his famous companion's skills. I will read them in full. Knowledge of literature? Nil. Knowledge of philosophy? Nil. Knowledge of astronomy? Nil. Knowledge of politics? Feeble. Knowledge of botany? Variable. Well up in belladonna, opium, and poisons, generally knows nothing of practical gardening. Knowledge of geology, practical but limited, tells at a glance different soils from each other. After walks, has shown me splashes upon his trousers and told me by their color and consistency in what part of London he had received them. Knowledge of chemistry, profound. Knowledge of anatomy, accurate but unsystematic. Knowledge of sensational literature, immense. He appears to know every detail of every horror perpetrated in the century. plays the violin well, is an expert single-stick player, boxer, and swordsman, has a good practical knowledge of British law. At first glance, this may be shocking. Isn't Holmes a genius? Shouldn't he know everything about everything? Isn't that the definition of a very smart person? And yet, the closest human being to Holmes gleefully attests that his celebrated pal has absolutely no idea about great books or the planetary system or philosophy or politics or houseplants. What then is Holmes good for? And why do we applaud him so? The answer would have made perfect sense to the rabbis of the Talmud. Holmes is a genius because he's a powerful deducer. Look at that list again, and you'll notice that Holmes is only an expert in those things that absolutely matter in his line of work. Crime stories, say, or poisons, or figuring out which bit of dirt came from what part of London. Here, he has trained his agile mind to contain all of the general theories so that he could observe the small details, because these small details are the simanim of Hakim, the obviously distinguishing marks he needs to know in order to tell if a person's guilty or innocent. He observes only these categories, only these small details, lofty big ideas like great books or great thinkers that have nothing to do with his line of work are meaningless to him, precisely because, well, they're just too general. Now, none of us, thankfully, need worry too much in our line of work about the Hound of the Baskervilles, like Holmes, or about whether a garment ought to be returned to its rightful owner, like the rabbis of the Talmud. But we could all use this lesson in how to think. And the next time we take a walk around the block, say, or visit the supermarket, we could try and train ourselves to look not at patterns, but at small, specific details. Because only that way, whether you reside in ancient Babylonia or in 221B Baker Street, lies certainty. This has been Take One. If you enjoy the show, and I hope that you do, then you are really going to love the new book just published by me. It's called How the Talmud Can Change Your Life, Surprisingly Modern Advice from a Very Old Book. You can order it now at your local bookstore or directly from the publisher through the link in this here podcast description or through that big online store whose logo is, you know, a smile. As always, please go rate and review Take One on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You could get your Take One t-shirts and mugs and other swag at tabletstudios.com, and you could subscribe to our weekly newsletter at tabletm.ag/Take One Newsletter. Take One is a Tablet Studios production. The show is hosted by me, Leah Leibowitz, and is produced and edited by Josh Cross, Robert Scaramucci, Quinn Waller, and Ellie Blyer. Our team also includes Stephanie Butney, Courtney Hazlett, and Tanya Singer. For more information, go to tabletmag.com/takeone or email us at takeone@tabletmag.com. I hope we have made your day a little more Talmudic.